Welcome to this APTA podcast.
Defining Moment spotlights a particular moment, incident, or case that either led the writer to a career in physical therapy or confirmed why they chose to become a physical therapist or physical therapist assistant. This is the account, in her own words and voice, of Lizzie Bellinger, PT, BPT, a board-certified orthopedic clinical specialist and a certified orthopedic manual therapist. She is founder and owner of Alliance Physical Therapy in Baltimore.
Before my world was changed forever, I was on a predictable career path. The daughter of an engineer and a social worker, raised by a stepmother with a doctorate in political science, I never questioned that I was going to college. I graduated from undergrad and PT school with honors. At my first job, I completed an orthopedic residency and got my board certification in orthopedic physical therapy. As soon as they would let me, I started teaching in the DPT program at my alma mater. I always said I would never open a private practice. Running a business is too messy, too risky, too much work. But here I am, sitting under the skylight in my practice's office, listening to the rain against the glass. It was at my last job at a hospital-based outpatient center, the calm before the storm, that I started to doubt my place in the profession. There was a patient on my schedule who had been evaluated by another therapist. The assessment from the initial evaluation read, "Patient is a 20-year-old male university student presenting 6 weeks post right distal clavicle fracture with conservative management." Easy enough, I thought. I walked into the waiting room, laptop in hand. "Arthur," I said. A young person with long blonde hair tied back in a low ponytail stood up slowly, picked up a black purse, and walked over to me, head down and shoulders rounded. I blinked. "I'm Lizzie," I said. "I'll be your therapist today." "Hi," the patient replied in a low voice, avoiding eye contact. As we walked back to the treatment room, I took in more details. Black fingernail polish, eyeshadow, rainbow pin on the purse strap. I felt off balance. There was nothing in the note about pronouns, gender identity, or preferred name. The patient sat down in the chair, silent. I've lived long enough to know what happens when you make assumptions. I perched on the treatment table and pretended to tap on my laptop. I said, "I can't find it in the chart. What pronouns do you use again?" "She, her," the patient whispered. "Gotcha," I said. "And what name do you usually go by?" "Aria," she said, and cleared her throat. "Okay, great," I said, tapping away. "I've documented that in the chart so we can get it right next time." This was a lie. There was no system for documenting pronouns or preferred name in the electronic medical record, at least not at that time. "So, I hear you broke your collarbone. How is it feeling today?" Bit by bit, Aria opened up, even making eye contact with me once or twice. I felt conflicted. I was grateful to offer some affirmation to someone who had clearly been so uncomfortable, but also frustrated that the practice had failed to create a system that would give me the opportunity to address the patient appropriately. Here, gender identity wasn't even a part of the conversation. I've been on the other end of this dynamic. Throughout my 10-year career, I've gotten great mentorship, worked with fantastic managers, and had coworkers I could relate to. But I never felt a true sense of belonging in any of my workplaces. My non-monogamous relationship style and the rainbow of gender identities of my partners has always required a few little white lies in order to pass as normal. I've tried coming out to a few colleagues with mixed results. I think if my career had continued uninterrupted, I would have swallowed the sense of unbelonging and kept on climbing the ladder. I had ambitions. I was waiting to hear back about getting added to the faculty list for the orthopedic residency program at the practice, mentoring a new grad, and planning to teach a continuing education unit course. Then, everything changed. My father, a man who rode his bike 9 miles to work daily and wrote software to process satellite data for NASA, was diagnosed with cancer in March of 2020. Grounded by pandemic travel restrictions, I watched from afar as my stepmother accompanied him to endless doctor's appointments and rounds of chemo. When I was finally able to fly to Minnesota to visit him, he was wearing a neck brace, recovering from a 5-level thoracic fusion and walking with a cane. He died just after his 70th birthday. 4 months later, my stepmother started complaining of fatigue. One day, she fell, for no other reason than simple exhaustion. She was admitted to the hospital and diagnosed with an aggressive form of pancreatic cancer. I was her primary caregiver during the last 10 days of her life. The experience was one of futile struggle and crushing sadness, and I came home disabled by grief. I quit my job so fast that the hospital system threatened to blacklist me for not giving enough notice. I spent those last obligatory 3 weeks dragging myself around the office in a trance and crying in the bathroom. It took me 6 months to even consider going back to work. I felt burned out, disillusioned, and fragile. I needed a professional home, a place where I could do the work I loved, and a place where I felt a sense of belonging. Did that place even exist? And that's when I had the idea of starting a private practice. Rather than searching for something that might not exist, what if I created the space I had always been seeking? A place where I would not only fit in, but others like me, both patients and colleagues, would feel right at home. I sat at my computer during the day while my family went to work and school and dreamed up a business plan. I wrote an inclusive mission statement for the practice, found a documentation service that would put pronouns front and center on the chart, and commissioned a colorful logo. But imposter syndrome wouldn't leave me alone. As a cisgender woman, I worried that I wasn't queer enough or that the population in Baltimore wouldn't see this as a needed service. Nonetheless, I pushed on, signing a lease and applying for a loan. Before I got the keys to my new space, I picked up some furniture from a psychotherapist who was downsizing. As I wandered through her office, selecting chairs and shelves, I noticed an informational pamphlet on social work support for transgender folks. She saw me looking at it. "I used to work for that organization," she said, eyeing me. "That's great. Part of the mission of my new practice is to serve the LGBTQ+ community, including trans folks." She lit up. "My therapy practice focuses on trans youth." And suddenly, we were friends. We talked and talked. I mentioned I was planning to teach a CEU course on LGBTQIA-friendly practice patterns for physical therapists, but wasn't confident that I knew enough to claim expertise. She put her hands out, stopping me in my tracks. With genuine emotion, she said, "Every time you teach that material, you save a life." So I kept going. 6 months later, I sat in my brand new private practice with Bex, a non-binary person with stubborn plantar fasciitis. During this second visit, I asked how they felt after our first appointment. "You know, my foot still hurts," they said, "but I just feel so much better." "What do you mean?" I asked, my fingers poised over the keyboard. "Well, I've had this pain for a year," Bex explained. "Every few months, I'd get frustrated and Google LGBTQ physical therapy and get a list of practices in New York City. But the last time I searched, your practice came up. And I'm just glad I'm finally getting this taken care of. I'm rarely at a loss for words, but I wasn't sure what to say. I had put my family's financial well-being and my fragile ego on the line to make this dream a reality. This was the first time someone outside my family had seen what I had done and told me it was good. "I'm just glad I can help," I managed, a little embarrassed. "Let's take a look at your foot." I hid my emotions in the familiar mechanics of the session, and the moment passed, but I've held on to it ever since. The practice is still new, but thriving under its inclusive mission. I hired another PT to help me who is just as passionate about inclusive care as I am. More than 50% of our patients identify as LGBTQIA+. They refer their friends and mention us in queer WhatsApp groups. I wish I could go back to my first visit with Aria and have her pronouns front and center so I could get it right the first time. But at least I'm getting it right now for patients like Bex who are seeking gender-affirming care. And now, in my office under the skylight, I feel right at home.
You can find more podcasts like this one on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify, or by visiting apta.org/podcasts. APTA members can also read the defining moment column in every issue of APTA magazine. Thanks for listening.